So here's a toast to the black countryman, in fun may you always indulge, may your wazin always be liquored, and your waistcoat never went for a bulge, a bulge, your waistcoat never went for a bulge.
My name's Brendan Hawthorne, and I'm here with Keith Williams, who's been part of the black country scene for many years. I don't think you'd mind me saying that. I'm just going to ask Keith, really, what got him started with writing and performing in the black country?
Well, that's a long story in a way. It could go back almost to my childhood. As a child, my father had a rather old book, which I now have another copy of black country stories. Some of them were historical, some of them, well, I say were, they are historical, some of them are in dialect. And I, even as a youngster, read this book quite avidly. As a teenager, I got involved with performing and entertaining old age pensioners clubs. In those days, called the Darby and Joan clubs,
right?
And I used to play harmonica, I used to sing, and as introductions, I used to tell some of these black country stories from the book I've just been mentioning, they seemed to be received quite well. People enjoyed them. I think that was probably the starting point. It took a while for me to get into writing myself, but that was the starting point of an interest in the dialect and the culture, if you like, of the black country as my heritage.
How important is dialect?
I think one of the indications of the importance you yourself have introduced me to. Because I wanted to ask you when we have our little chat later about your involvement with the reading of the document in the Birmingham University.
Yeah.
Because I thought the outcome of that, and I'll leave the detail till later, but the outcome of that story was such that, in my opinion, something we could have lost was rescued because of something which we're currently losing because of lack of use, and that is the dialect.
I mean, language always progresses, as in changing, I should say. But I think we are generations, aren't we, of dialect users, and each generation will have its version of dialect and its use. Do you think dialect is under threat?
Yes, I do. I think it's not under threat purposely or maliciously. I think it's under threat by a natural progression which we can't stop. That is a transmigration of people through an area, in and out of the community, who have different languages, different accents, different approaches. And naturally, I think the dialect, as we know it, is being diluted and flattened out.
Yeah, and I think this is probably due to things like television and radio as well, isn't it?
That yes.
We're more open to more neutral languages.
Yes.
In the sense of dialect and accent. Obviously, we've still got a lot of very regionalised accents. For example, Liverpudlian, people from Newcastle, the North East, and places like Bristol, the heavy industry accents, which seem to focus still on very much an accent and a dialect. How much do you think those accents have survived because of long-term generational industries, which obviously fed their local economies, which are now falling a little bit in how one person would follow into their, for argument's sake, father's footsteps, as it was then?
I think one of the things we've got to be careful of is the definition of dialect and the subject of accent. I think accent is the way the words are sounded, whereas the dialect is a language with vocabulary, with grammar and with syntax. And I think what we're losing is the dialect side of it. The accents tend to change because of fashion, if you like. And you quite rightly said, on the television and radio broadcast, you now are getting accents where in the past it's very much frowned upon to have an accent on the radio. You had to have a radio voice. I think that has disappeared quite a reasonable time ago, and that is colouring to a certain extent the way we speak in conversational terms.
I'm going to take you back a little bit in time here, Keith. You were obviously one of the four running members of the Black Country Night Out, with some very, very well-respected notables of that time. When the Black Country dialect was probably more popular within itself, but now is at the point of not being ignored, but it's a bit of a struggle to keep it going. So let's go back to the time when we, as a Black Country person, I was told, never spake broad because you won't get on. But at that time, the Black Country Night Out was probably at its most successful. What was your role in all of that, and how, you know, have you got any stories from that point?
The role that I played in that, to a degree, was from the musical point of view.
Yeah.
In that I had been, along with other people of a variety of groups, singing for other types of music, gospel, folk music, country and western. I got into writing some of my own music, and then I suddenly realised that there was a part to be played by including in some of the compositions local stories of local people and local events. They weren't all, they didn't all lend themselves to dialect. Some of them naturally fell into what we call the estuary English. But then some of the features appeared to lend themselves to a dialect inclusion, and it seemed to work. It wasn't a conscious thing, it was a totally unconscious thing, a development, if you like, that I had grown up with people speaking dialect quite naturally, conversationally, and so in a way I was turning those conversations into a musical event, and found it was being successful, and carried on doing that. So when we joined the Black Country Night Out team, that was part of the feature. There's one set we did which was on Black Country subjects, dialect and Estuary English, and another part which we used covers. So we were supporting, if you like, the other acts in the show with the musical interlude. And we had the opportunity to use some of my material in the music as well.
It's very interesting you say that, because as people from a heavily industrialised area,
yeah,
we have this tendency to switch roles from being the Black Country through and through, and the language and the dialect that we use with our accent. But then we also try to convey the stories in as much of more standardised English as we can. How important is it that these stories of locals and notables are sort of contained within a story or a song, and how relevant are stories from other regions to this region? Is it that human nature is the same wherever you go, and We can tell the stories from different regions, but in our own way.
I think there's a number of points you're raising there, and one is it's very common to have similar situations in other areas of the country. So you're always going to get some, how can I put this? You can always get some sort of telling of the story in their own way. So you'll get that in the Black Country just as you will in any other area of the country. But in terms of this subject about how important it is to include local information, this is history. This is a development throughout time. And if the details are not shared with a variety of people, they in their turn are going to be lost. We're going to lose information, knowledge and experience. Slightly off that subject, but pertinent, years ago when we were at school, I heard someone say that they could learn something better if it was in the form of a song. They could remember the details, whereas as a pure fact, they couldn't remember it. And I think that is the point I'd like to make in the inclusion of things like poetry and song, which have a rhythm and a format that can give information in such a way it is more easily remembered. And this has been indicated throughout history when you think about the bards of the medieval time and even before that, where they tell stories and histories in song and poetry. And I think that's what is the importance of the art, if you like, of literature in the preservation of historical content and information.
Do you think this is a follow-on really from us learning things like nursery rhymes? You know, we can probably all remember the story of at least one nursery rhyme that would have been told to us when we were very young. And it's the pattern and the rhythm, as you rightly say, that keeps that information fresh within our minds. And also the fact that, I suppose, historically, we've been brought up with the ballad format, haven't we, where you've got fixed lines and fixed verses to perpetuate an idea or a story.
I think that's a very pertinent point. I think it's the rhythm, as much as anything, which helps with the remembering things. It's much easier to remember something in rhythm than it is to remember something in prose, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite convinced that is the importance of the art form in the preservation of something like the culture of the Black Country, other parts of the country also.
Now, we've mentioned the Black Country Night Out, and I have to say that that was late 70s into the 80s.
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah. I'll have to think it carefully and do calculations to get it accurate.
But we've clearly managed to bridge the gap into the 21st century, and the Black Country accent, dialect, etc., has obviously drawn in interest now from around the various places of drawing in, like film companies are working in the Black Country, and we're not having to suffer approximations of our language anymore. We are getting people who openly speak it on TV. How much do you think the media has been representing the Black Country, shall we say, in a less than favourable light with regional accents and dialects, and especially the Midlands and possibly more so the Black Country dialect?
I think one of the problems with dialects, more so accents rather than dialect proper, is a comedic effect. It has become a caricature as opposed to a correct vision. And people have almost, in some cases, purposely approximated the accents and the dialect. I've heard on more than one occasion people try to copy the accents and the dialect, and it sounds false. It's difficult to show a true representation if you haven't been part of the culture itself.
I mean, the other thing as well is, I mean, we can cross the road, can't we, in the Black Country and hear a different accent and a different set of words. How much do you think the industries, if you like, and the social conditions have impacted on the words we use?
Oh, tremendously. The point the I come across on a slightly regular basis is the use of words, or shall we say the explanation of words used in recent history, where there's different meanings for different situations. The word butty is heard in the mining trade. Then the similar sort of person is found in the nailing trade as a fudger. In the north, there's totally different words for these particular people. We're losing the words, and if we did use them for information, we'd have to explain what they are before the people who are not familiar with them have to enjoy, if you like, or understand the conversation.
I suppose the one word you've used there, butty, as well, is the different connotations of the word. You know, butty in one sense means the charge hand or the lead.
Yes.
But it can also mean your sandwich.
It can also mean a boat,
canal boat. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And I think the way it's said and within its context actually explains what we mean by it.
The point I was making about being part of the culture, I can explain by my own experience. I grew up with the two sides of my family, one coming from Dudley and one coming from Tipton. My mother's side came from Tipton and quite regularly used the dialect naturally in conversation. I don't mean as a comedic effect, I don't mean as a novelty, I mean as pure conversation between people who were relatives and friends. And I came across words that I realised by their context what their intention was. As I grew up and became interested in origins and the way things had developed and the history, I did some quite minor research and found that those words that my family were using quite normally and in a natural way were actually historically accurate in an extremely deep sense. Even going back to medieval times, they were quite ordinary words used throughout the Black Country. And as a child, you never think that because you take it for granted. It's part of your conversation. But as you grow up, you suddenly start to realise this is important. Something's being lost. Those words have a historical importance, although we'd use them in a natural way.
Keith Gwilliam, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about the influences of language and dialect. And if anybody wants to listen to some more interviews, please look down future podcasts. Keith Gwilliam, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.